Yeah, no one wants to be mediocre. No one wants to be average. No one wants to be just like middle of the road, you know? Like, we all want to do something amazing. We want to have an amazing life. We want to have an amazing story to tell, and we want to have something amazing that we want to offer to Srila Prabhupada. Maybe at the end of life, when Srila Prabhupada comes to us, then asks us, what did you do with your time here in this world? So, yeah, overcoming mediocrity is something we all battle with. It's not a one-off battle. Every day you have to try and overcome mediocrity, because when you wake up in the morning, it doesn't matter how good yesterday was, every day is another day. I remember I used to always think on book distribution. You know, it doesn't matter how many years you've been out on book distribution. When you're out in the morning on a cold morning and you see the people, you have to break the ice again, and it takes effort and it takes enthusiasm. So I'll try to share some thoughts with you. Please engage, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and speak not too long, and rather it'd be really good to have questions and answers on this topic, because it's one of those topics where we really want to bring out what's going on in your lives and your hearts and minds, and try and address some of those points. Om Agyanatimirandhasigyananjana Shalakaya Mukham karoti vachalam pangam langhayate girim yat kripatamaham vande shri gurum dinatarinam paramanandamadhavam shri chaitanya ishwaram namaom vishnupadaya krishna prishthaya bhutale shrimate bhakti vedanta swami niti namine namaste saraswati deve gauravani pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Perhaps one of the biggest challenges in life as you grow up is trying to avoid becoming cynical. Maybe someone can just give me the sharing rights, Ravi, if possible, because I just share a PowerPoint. It's so easy as you get older to become cynical. When you're young, you're idealistic. Sometimes when you grow up, you become a bit more realistic. And the danger is, as you go on in years, sometimes you can become cynical. When we first joined the movement, then we thought everyone was a pure devotee, isn't it? Like everyone, from the sannyasi to the devotee leading kirtan to the person washing pots to anyone who had a dhoti and tilak on, we thought, wow, pure devotees, a movement of pure devotees. Later on, we got to know many of the devotees, and we thought, okay, maybe not everyone. Maybe everyone's not necessarily a pure devotee, but there are some pure devotees out there. Later on, we might have observed more in the movement and become more streetwise, and we think, you know what? I don't think there's any pure devotees, but at least I'm a pure devotee. Like, I know my heart. I'm sincere. And later on, we think no one's a pure devotee, not even me. No one's a pure devotee. Does pure devotion exist? Does purity really manifest in this world? Or is it just something we read about in the scriptures? So it's very easy in life to become cynical. Yet Srila Prabhupada came here to make pure devotees. Unattainable or distant as purity, pure devotion may seem, this was the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Someone once came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I think you're the 13th Mahajan. Prabhupada said, very good, you should become the 14th Mahajan. And that really was Prabhupada's mood, that everyone should become a pure devotee. Prabhupada said, my movement will be successful if even one person becomes a pure devotee. And today, we'll talk about moving towards purity and overcoming mediocrity. And I just got some short slides that I'll share with you. And just to kind of take us on a bit of a journey. Spiritual mediocrity. In our life, we go through so many emotions. You can see here many different faces. They say sometimes a picture tells 1,000 words. And so in our spiritual life, we experience many, many different things. We sometimes experience frustration. We sometimes feel very hopeful. Sometimes we're intrigued. Sometimes we feel trapped. Sometimes we feel bored. Sometimes we feel very let down. We go through so many different emotions, stages, states in our spiritual journey. If I was to ask all of you to give us one word which sums up where you are spiritually right now, not just today, but generally in your spiritual life. Anyone like to write on the chat? It would be nice to just see what kind of, what you're going through in spiritual life now. How would you describe your spiritual life in one word if you had to at the moment? What would sum it up at the beginning of 2021? Give us some answers. Srivatsa says stuck, stuck in the mud. Sophia says new beginnings. Ratish, okay. Abhishek feels hopeful. Yes, you can't survive without hope. Jessica's doing very good. Kishan's doing average. Shruti and Kapi, I don't know if that's both of you or one of you, but you feel complacent. Ram Govind, hopeful but average. Vishali's learning. Mukunda feels like he's on a plateau. Sham, volatile and stagnant. Yeah, so you all are very, I'm sure you're very humble and I'm sure you're very open to the topic today. Spiritual mediocrity, yes. If we look at our lives, sometimes we do feel maybe I'm a bit mediocre. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the 10-80-10 rule. The 10-80-10 rule is very interesting. It can be used in many, many different contexts. 10-80-10 describes many, many phenomena that we see in life. But one thing that 10-80-10 represents in the world is sometimes the composition of any group of people. So for example, if you're in a company, then the 10-80-10 rule stands. And what's that? In any given organization or company, 10 people really believe in what the company stands for. They're willing to work night and day, tooth and nail, to fulfill the goals of their company. They live it, they breathe it, they believe in it. The other 10% on the other side are basically completely disengaged. They're just looking for the next place to go. They're like on the edge. They want to leave. They're disillusioned. They've become completely disconnected. But the 80 in the middle are the ones who are not really disillusioned, and they're not really that inspired about the company either. They're just kind of there because they get money and it fulfills their needs and is comfortable and life is okay. And, you know, I'm getting by. It may not be amazing, but it's okay. And that makes up the majority of a company. If you look at sometimes a community is like this as well. 10% are really like they believe in the community. They're ready to do anything for the community. 10 are about to leave the community because they want to find another bunch of people to hang out with. And 80% of people in the community are just okay with it. They're like, yeah, these people are all right. They're not like that amazing, but I don't have any problem. And by being in this community, I get lots of benefits. So I'll just hang around and be in the community. 10-80-10 also stands for a spiritual organization or spiritual practitioners. In the Krishna consciousness movement, I've not done a survey, I have to admit, but I hazard a guess that it still stands in a spiritual community, the 10-80-10 rule. And what is the 10-80-10 rule in the Krishna consciousness movement? There are 10% who are feeling connection. There are 10% who are embracing purity. There are the 10% of the movement that are feeling, experiencing, and tasting the fruits of real, genuine Krishna consciousness. That 10% is the 10% which is connected to Krishna. And that 10% represents, I think if we were to use a word, purity, which then gives ecstasy. There are another 10% of the movement who are on the edge. They've become disillusioned with Krishna consciousness, maybe disillusioned with the practice, disillusioned with the devotees, disillusioned with their experiences of what they've gone through. And actually that 10% is just waiting to leave the movement. There are devotees like that who are in that percentile, who are emergency and who are about to leave their spiritual practice. But the incredible thing is that 80% of the members of the Krishna consciousness movement are neither in a state of ecstasy, nor are they in a state of emergency, but they are simply in a state of, yep, you got it, mediocrity. How would you describe mediocrity in a word? You can also give me some words if they come up in your mind on the chat. Some of the words for me that characterize mediocrity is casual spiritual practice, ritualistic spiritual practice, complacent spiritual practice, mechanical spiritual practice, boredom in their spiritual journey. Please do let me know if you have any more words, which, yes, Ravi, thank you. Apathy, kind of, yeah, not really like concerned in any deep way. These are some of the words, religious, maybe, just kind of going through the motions. Cultural, simply practicing out of culture or tradition, but not really feeling inspired. Some of the words you've used here, stagnant, plateau. These are some of the words that could be used to describe someone who is mediocre, who is suffering from mediocrity in their spiritual life. Here's an interesting verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And this verse is also repeated in the Mahabharata in a very similar way. Vaveva chintaya mukto paramananda apluto. Yo vimukdo jado balo yogunebhya param gataha. In this amazing verse of the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that there's only two types of people who are free from anxiety and merged in great happiness. One who is a retarded, childish fool, and one who has completely approached and surrendered to the Supreme Lord and who is beyond the three modes of nature. In other words, the happy people are the pure ones, and ironically, the really ignorant ones. Because as they say in the English language, ignorance is bliss. Now, for the 80% that are right in the middle, they are basically experiencing different levels and different intensities of unhappiness. Neither have they found spiritual happiness, neither they can pursue material happiness, and therefore they live in a suspended state, struggling with mediocrity and not really feeling satisfied in any real stage of life, in any real state that they're in. So then the question remains for us to ask ourselves, where am I on this continuum? Am I part of the 10, the 80, or the 10? There's a good chance that most of us are part of the 80. So then the next question you have to ask yourself is, where on the 80 am I? Am I closer to emergency or am I closer to purity? Where would you place yourself? And let me tell you an even more important question than that is not only where you are on this continuum, but the more important question is what direction are you going in? In which direction is your trajectory of spiritual life going? So if someone says, I'm here, but I'm going this way, brilliant. Someone may say, I'm here, but I'm going this way. That's a problem. The question really remains for us is not simply to place ourselves, but to ask ourselves, what's the trajectory of the direction in which I'm going? And then we have to ask ourselves, how can I make the trajectory towards purity, which brings ecstasy? How can I go from mediocrity to purity? That is really what should be on every devotee's mind. And every devotee should have a plan. Every devotee should have plan for how they're going to make that journey. That's what purposeful spiritual life means. But shall I tell you, most devotees don't know where they are on this. Neither do they know what trajectory they're going in. And even more worrying, they don't have a plan to change that trajectory and go towards purity. To be a devotee, to be an introspective devotee, to be a devotee who is going to make significant progress in life, you have to know where you are, in what direction you're going, and what you need to do in order to get to the direction you want to be going in. And that level of introspection must be integrated into every single devotee's life. Yeah. So that's what we're going to kind of discuss today. As I speak, if any questions come up in your mind, then you can just put them on the chat. And maybe I'll stop here for a second. Let me pause and let me ask you whether you do have any questions on what I've said so far in terms of the 10-80-10 rule, placing ourselves on this kind of continuum of spiritual life and trying to map where we are and where we're going. Does anyone have any questions? Just so I know that you're with me. And then we can kind of go into other topics. Does anyone have any questions? No? Okay, everyone's good? Okay, so I carry on then. All right, so let me carry on. Okay. Is that a question? Okay, so Sophia is asking a question. How to find out where you are in the 10-80-10? Oh, okay, very good question. All right, so I'm going to carry on with the presentation because that's what I was going to talk about next. Thank you. Okay, so how do we find out where we are on the 10-80-10 continuum? We have been blessed in our life. We've been blessed with scriptures. Scriptures which talk about basically this journey that we're on. So, for example, you have books like Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, if you were to label the Srimad Bhagavatam, you could say it's an anthology of love. Because basically, it contains stories of devotees who had incredible love for Krishna. And we learn so much about their journey and how they awaken that love and how that love is expressed and what are the symptoms of that love. And then you begin to enter into a world of what it means to be in a loving relationship with Krishna. So the Bhagavatam is basically a love story. It's an anthology of love stories. And that's very beautiful. We have books like the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we can say is like the science of love. Because what the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu does is it doesn't just depict what is love, but what the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu does is it basically explains the science of how to reawaken one's love. And therefore, Rupa Goswami, through the stages of sadhana, bhava, and then obviously to prema, basically outlines what is the process by which Krishna prema, pure love for Krishna, which is Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, Sadhya Kabunoi, is already established within the heart, but how to awaken that. So Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is like the science of love. And then we have books like the Madhurya Kadambini, which we can say is like the roadmap of love. So we can't stress this enough that the scriptures are the most valuable thing we have in our life. The great sage, the great teacher, the great Acharya Sanatan Goswami says, Madeka Bandhu, Mad Sangin, Mad Guru, Mad Mahadana, Mad Nishtaraka, Mad Bhagya, Mad Ananda, Namostate. He looks at the Bhagavatam and he says, the Bhagavatam is my only friend. The Bhagavatam is my constant companion. The Bhagavatam is the source of happiness in my life. The Bhagavatam is that which is raising me up. And the Bhagavatam is that which is my greatest fortune and awakening my greatest wealth. In this way, he takes the Bhagavatam and he installs it within his consciousness and he says, this is my constant companion in my life. And therefore, this is basically one realization that we need to come to, that the scriptures are perhaps one of the most valuable assets we have on the journey of life. Because through the scriptures, one can understand where they are, where they want to go, and how to go on that journey and avoid all problems and overcome all obstacles. So, in answer to Sophia's question, how do we understand where we are on this journey? We understand through Jnana Chakshush or Shastra Chakshush. We understand by seeing our life and examining our character and our devotion through the lens of the words of the most elevated and progressive spiritual personalities in the creation. And basically, we read the scriptures, look at our life, and then things become very, very apparent about where we are on this journey and where we need to be going. So, hang on, I'm just seeing. Got it. So this is how we understand where we are. And then obviously, as we say often in our spiritual circles, guru, sadhu, shastra. So yes, these shastras are there, and through the spiritual teachers and the devotees around us who observe us, who help us understand the scripture in relevance to our life, through this combination of guru, sadhu, shastra, you can very easily map where you are in the spiritual journey. So your connection with a guru, your connection with a saintly person, a sadhu, and your connection with shastra, these are the three connections which are probably the most valuable connections you have in your entire life. Because it is through these connections that one can understand where they are, where they ultimately want to be, and how to get there. So this is what I wanted to share with you at this point. And now let us look a little bit closer. What does it mean to go from mediocrity to purity? How do we make that journey? How do we create the change in our life? How do we, what do we need to develop on the way in order to achieve that destination of purity and ecstasy? And I'll share with you today three principles. And I think if you apply these principles in your life and you think deeply about them, these are very valuable principles which will be very revealing, I think. Broadly speaking, we can say to go from mediocrity to purity, you need to embrace three things in your life: honesty, intensity, and tenacity. Yeah, just think about these words for a second. Some of these words are words that we probably don't like. We think like, oh, honesty, don't like that word. Intensity, definitely don't like that word. And tenacity, oh my God, that sounds like a lot of work. Don't like that one either. These are not words which sometimes feel immediately something that we're like, we're drawn to it. However, let me tell you, these are the things which will help you to awaken your greatest wealth. And actually, these things, although difficult, although challenging, are the things which can bring about real wealth. This is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami speaking in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, I'm more sinful than Jaga and Madai, and even lower than the worms in the stool. Anyone who hears my name loses the results of his pious activities. Anyone who utters my name becomes sinful. In this first bit of the verse, he is basically talking about how fallen he is. His extreme description of his fallen state is something that we can't even relate to, because if we began thinking in this way, we'd think we'd become completely depressed. We'd become completely dejected. We'd become completely crestfallen and think there's nothing, like, why is not this life isn't even worth living? Yeah, what does Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami say straight after his admittance of his fallen state? He then goes on to say, but who in this world but Nityananda could show his mercy to such an abominable person as me? And therefore, along with feeling fallen, Kaviraj Goswami is also feeling very, very hopeful. And this combination of being very honest about our fallen state, being very, very introspective and understanding where I'm falling short, when accompanied by hopefulness, that honesty of our fallen state is very, very powerful, because it allows us to be in the mood of a beggar. It allows us to be in the mood of realizing that I need to improve and I need help to improve and there's loads of work to do and I got to make changes. So we have to somehow look inside our hearts and be very, very honest with ourselves about what our blocks are, what our anarthas or unwanted things are, what our obstacles are. And no doubt each one of us will have our own challenges. You see, the scriptures explain that there are four defects of the conditioned soul. One of the defects is that we have imperfect senses, right? Another defect of the conditioned soul is that we are subject to illusion. Another defect of the conditioned soul is that we make mistakes. And the final defect of the conditioned soul is that we have a propensity to cheat. Now, if you look closely at this, the fact that you have imperfect senses, you can't really do much about that. The fact that you have imperfect senses means that you will fall into illusion. Can't really do much about that. We'll all fall into illusion. One time a devotee came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, sometimes I fall into Maya. Prabhupada said, you're always in Maya. And sometimes you fall into Krishna consciousness. So we're going to have imperfect senses. We're going to fall into illusion. And when we fall into illusion, naturally we will make mistakes. You can't do anything about that. Don't think that tomorrow you'll wake up and you'll stop making mistakes. A conditioned soul will make mistakes. The first three of these defects, practically we can't do anything about them. But the one thing we can avoid is the tendency of a conditioned soul who has imperfect senses, who falls into illusion, who therefore makes mistakes, and who then has a tendency to cheat, to cover it up, to brush it under the carpet, to lock it up in the cupboard so that no one else sees it, to present themselves to the world as something that they're not. That propensity of cheating, yes, we do have something we can do about that. Instead of succumbing to cheating, cheating ourselves, cheating others, we embrace honesty. We find devotees who we can speak to, and we're very open and honest about where we're falling short and how we need to improve. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, weakness, that is expected. But cheating, that cannot be tolerated. If a devotee falls into the propensity to cheat, to present themselves to the world as something that they're not, then that will block their journey towards purity, and that will ensure that they remain in mediocrity. And therefore, one of the first principles is that there can never be purity unless there is honesty. There can never be a chance to overcome mediocrity until and unless one has embraced honesty. However, that honesty is accompanied by great hope. So sometimes we're scared of being honest because we think I'll become more depressed. But in Krishna consciousness, your honesty does not depress you, because your honesty of your fallen state is accompanied by a realization of how powerful the Krishna consciousness process is. Maya is very strong, but Krishna is stronger. And therefore, a devotee has nothing to worry about or become dejected about, even in difficulties like this. Okay? And we can revisit this, please. If you have any questions on these principles, you know, pop them in the chat or keep them in your minds, and then we'll come back to it. But this is the first principle I want to share with you, honesty. The second principle in terms of overcoming mediocrity and going towards purity is that one must develop intensity in their spiritual life. This is a famous verse from the second canto of the Bhagavatam. Sukadev Goswami says to Parikshit, Akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udaridi divrena bhakti yogena yajaita purusham param. Sukadev says, divrena bhakti yogena. There's very, very important words in the verse. He says, even if you don't have any desires, or even if you have every desire under the sun, sarva kamo va, even if you have so many material desires, even if your entire consciousness is riddled with material aspirations and material conditionings, still, divrena bhakti yogena, if you engage in bhakti yoga, but the key word here is divrena bhakti yogena, if you engage in intense devotional service. In other words, everyone is performing devotional service, but how many individuals are performing intense devotional service? That may be a much less percentage. Yeah. Again, 10-80-10. In the Krishna consciousness movement, 10% are probably practicing intense devotional service, and 80% are performing casual devotional service. If you want to get out of mediocrity, we must increase the intensity of our spiritual practice. And then one may say, what does it mean to increase the intensity of spiritual practice? Well, there's many ways in which you can do it. One is increase the quantity of your devotional service. That's a very obvious and simple one. Once Prabhupada came out of a plane, and as he walked down the stairs, everyone hit the deck, like everyone bowed down to him. So the servant was next to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, it's amazing. As soon as you walked out, everyone bowed down to you. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, they're all bowing down to me because I've conquered lust. And the devotee was like, wow, that's the power of a pure devotee. That's the power of purity, that it awakens such a faith in people. And then later on, Prabhupada looked at the devotee and he said, actually, it's not that I don't have lust, it's that I have no time for lust. So that was a very interesting statement. Of course, Prabhupada had no lust, but that level of purity may not have been relatable to the devotee who was thinking like, that's Prabhupada's free of lust, but I can't be free of lust. But Prabhupada then said, actually, I have no time for lust. And when the devotee heard that, he thought, well, I could structure my life in such a way that even though it's not that I can say I don't have any lust, but if I can turn around and say I don't have any time for lust, then I'll be doing good. And in that moment, the devotee realized that this is what I have to do in my life. I have to increase the quantity of devotional service in my life so that there are no gaps for Maya to take over. It's a simple thing, but we tend to leave so many gaps. And as we leave gaps, I think someone on the chat put, they feel volatile. Yes, we feel volatile because there is space in our life, and we know that that space could be hijacked by Maya, and that at any time we could be overcome in that way. So if you want to increase the intensity of your devotional service, the easiest and most simple thing is increase the quantity of devotional service. But someone may come to the point where they say, I don't have any more time in my life. I can't fit anything more in. That means I can't increase my intensity. Yes, you can. Even if you can't increase your quantity, you can increase your quality. Sorry, my handwriting's not so good. Can you increase the quality, the absorption, the attention, the detail, the concentration, and the deep thought that goes into the offering that you're making to Krishna. There are many ways in which you can increase quality without necessarily needing more time or more space in your life. For example, you may chant a certain number of rounds. Say you chant 16 rounds, and you may say, I have no time to chant extra rounds. But one thing you can then do to increase your intensity is you can say, but I'm going to chant all my 16 rounds in the morning before 7 o'clock. Now, that doesn't take you any extra time in the day. But by doing that, you increase the quality of your spiritual practice. So if you look ingeniously at your spiritual life, you can increase the intensity of your devotional service by increasing the quality, which doesn't necessarily involve you needing any extra time whatsoever. It just requires your own concentration and determination to do it. And in that way, you can increase the intensity. Here's another way to increase your intensity. Difficulty. I'm giving you words, probably don't like any of these words. These are important words. Sometimes you can increase the intensity of your devotional service by accepting more difficulties, by accepting services which require you to make a sacrifice, which require you to go to a deeper level of selflessness, which require you to create and cry out independence on Krishna, which require you to completely come off any selfish consideration. That is also another way to increase your intensity of devotional service, because when we take on difficulties in spiritual life, in the service of Krishna, in the service of the mission of Srila Prabhupada, then we are beginning to rise to a greater and greater level of selflessness. And it is in that selflessness that we burn up our material desires, which are based around selfishness. Here's another way to increase your intensity: responsibility. In your devotional service, if you begin taking responsibility for the spiritual journey of other individuals, then again, you increase your intensity, because that requires more sacrifice, that requires more prayer, that requires more selflessness. One expands their circle of concern. And in that way, the intensity of one's devotional service is increasing. So mediocrity creeps in because we're not increasing the quantity, we're not increasing the quality, we're not increasing the difficulty, and we're not increasing in responsibility. With every year of devotional life, these things should be increasing. And know for sure, if you don't increase these things, you will be stuck in that 80% of mediocrity to a greater or lesser extent. And remember, the Bhagavatam says there's only two types of happy people in this world. So somehow or other, we got to get out of that 80%, because we will feel a certain level of dissatisfaction. From the things that I'm saying, I'm sure you can appreciate that it's going to be uncomfortable to come out of mediocrity. It takes a lot of discipline. But once I was having a conversation with His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj, and Maharaj said, I want to share something with you, as he always does in his infinite wisdom. And Maharaj said to me, the pain of discipline is uncomfortable, but the pain of regret is unbearable. It was a very powerful statement, I felt. Because we sometimes shy away from discipline because it's uncomfortable. But when we don't discipline ourselves, we fall short of our potential. And when we fall short of our potential, we feel regret. And the feeling of regret is much more uncomfortable than the pain of discipline. It's like, say, for example, tomorrow, if you want to wake up, right? You set your mind that I'll wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Then when your alarm goes off at 4 o'clock, it's uncomfortable. And say, for example, you sleep in and you end up waking up at 10 o'clock in the morning. When you wake up at 10 o'clock, you feel so bad. You feel so terrible. And the most amazing thing is that feeling of what you feel like at 10 o'clock is much more uncomfortable than the feeling of what you felt like at 4 o'clock when you were faced with the decision of waking up. So if you had just managed to bite the bullet and wake up, you would have saved yourself from the feeling at 10 o'clock, which was much worse. So, although these words sound difficult, sound intimidating, sound like things we shy away from, we should start looking at them in a different way, that these are the things which are going to get me out of my own mediocrity. The final thing I'll share with you on this topic of moving from mediocrity to purity is that it's going to take tenacity. It's going to take determination. We are going to slip up. We're going to fall. We're not going to be living up to the ideals at every single moment, but we have to carry on. Yeah, this is a very, very famous verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Jata shraddha mat katashu nirvina sarvakarmashu veda dukhatmakan kaman parityagya pyanishvara. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, all of us have done that to some extent. So that first bit, yeah, that sounds like us. We've awakened some faith in Krishna. Disgusted with all material activities. Yeah, we look at material activities and we think, why would you get involved in all of that? Knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery. Yeah, we know that whenever we engage in sense gratification, we become miserable. But still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment. So it's like this first bit means we know all of this, but the fact of the matter is we're still unable to give it up. So what does Krishna say? Tato bhaje tamam prita shraddhalur dridanishchaya. Even though you know material life is terrible, and even though sometimes you fall prey to material life, tato bhaje tamam prita shraddhalur dridanishchaya. Stay happy. Don't become depressed. Don't become so guilty that you feel, oh my God, I'm terrible. I just need to leave this behind. No. Remain happy and continue on with great faith and conviction, knowing that you will eventually be able to overcome it. Krishna says, even though my devotee is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, they know that this is going to lead to misery. And they sincerely repent, such devotees eventually they will attain perfection. There's one Christian monastic, he writes a book. It's called Falling Upwards. And I like it very much. It's a very nice title. Because there are a few unique souls who will fly upwards to the spiritual world. You find some people like that. They just like their feet don't touch the ground. It's like they were just here for one last little thing and they just fly towards Goloka Vrindavan. But for the vast majority of us, we won't be flying upwards, but we can still learn how to fall upwards. And he makes the point that everyone in their spiritual journey will be falling. But the way in which you pick yourself up with grace, the way in which after a letdown, you continue on with enthusiasm and determination, even after feeling as though, I'm not making it, one has so much hope in their heart that they continue on. In this way, he says, you will fall upwards. In other words, the falling is not the problem, and the falling won't be a problem as long as you learn to pick yourself up with grace and continue on. And this is the story of our life. Did you know that, say, for example, a plane is going from here, say Heathrow. Okay, my pen's gone. Heathrow here to, let's say, LAX. Yeah, and say there is a flight path. This is the flight path. And this is the plane here. You can see I'm a terrible drawer. Did you know that any given plane, when it goes from one direction to another, for 80% of the journey is never on the actual line of the flight path? Did you know that? The plane usually goes like this, and then it goes like this, and then it goes like this, and it goes like this, and like this, and like this. And there you see that actually it's only ever on the line a few times. It's very interesting. In our life, in spiritual life, we may not always be on the line. There'll always be something in our life which is out of place. But that's just like a plane. But what is the plane doing at every moment, even though it's not on the flight path? It's at every moment trying to come back to the flight path. And if you're coming back to the flight path, even though for 80% of journey, you're not actually exactly on the flight path, still you reach your destination. And in this way, in spiritual life, it's not that we're going to be on the line at every moment of our spiritual life. But whenever we're trying to come back to the standard, we fall down and pick ourselves up with grace and come back to the standard, the ideal that we seek, then eventually we make it to our destination. And therefore, even Krishna says in the Gita, what is that? Yato yato nischalati manaschanchalam astiram tatastato niyam yetad atmanyeva vasamnayet. Krishna says, from wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering nature, atmanyeva vasamnayet, keep bringing it back, keep bringing it back. So Krishna already says, yeah, nischalati, you're not going to be on the path. You're going to be nischalati. You're going to be wandering everywhere. However, atmanyeva vasamne, keep bringing it back. And therefore, on the journey of spiritual life, from mediocrity to purity, for a lot of that journey, you may fall short, but just make sure you have tenacity. And so this is what I wanted to share with you today. 80% of us are here, mediocrity. 10% are experiencing real spiritual connection. We want to make the journey to go from here to here. In order to do that, you have to be honest. You have to know what are the blocks, where you're falling short, what are the difficulties. You have to have a means and a way to be open. Weakness is expected. Weakness is human. But cheating ourselves, cheating others, cheating Krishna, that won't help us to get out of mediocrity. Not only that, we have to increase the intensity of our devotional service. What you did 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it's not enough. You need to do more. You need to keep increasing the intensity. Muhammad Ali, is it Muhammad Ali or Mike Tyson? They used to say, I only start counting the push-ups when it begins to hurt. In other words, you can't say, well, I did 20 push-ups last year, so I'm continuing on with 20. I'm not going back. No, but the 20 you do now is going to have less effect than the 20 that you did last year, because now you should be increasing the intensity. You have more capacity. So now you'll have to do 30 push-ups to get the result of what 20 push-ups you were doing last year. That's the reality of how life works. And tenacity. Remember, you will fall on that journey. There will be days when you are not living up to where you want to be. But keep going. Tato bhajeta, mam prita, shraddhalur, dhrida nishchaya. Continue, remain happy and continue, carry on your spiritual practice with conviction and faith. And in this way, you can easily make the journey, and then we can all be situated here on the platform of purity. Because yes, that was Srila Prabhupada's plan. Srila Prabhupada's plan was to make pure devotees. And everyone can be a pure devotee. But it will take some effort. So, okay, these are some thoughts I wanted to share with you. I don't know, Ravi, if there are some private questions which anyone has sent to you, or if there is, or if anyone wants to unmute, or if anyone wants to put a question on the chat, we can also look at that. Or maybe you don't have a question, but maybe you have some comment or reflection. That's also fine. So yeah, I'll kind of hand over and see if there's anything from your side.
Sure. Yeah. First of all, thank you so much, Prabhuji, for that talk. It was very, you know, valuable to get your insights and encouragement about, first of all, how to assess where we're at in our spiritual lives, and then specifically how we can go from mediocrity to purity based off the three principles you mentioned: honesty, intensity, and tenacity. So yeah, very relevant talk. Thank you. And we have actually a lot of questions that have been coming in through our anonymous form. But before we get to those questions, if people would like to ask questions by unmuting yourself, or if you want to post in the chat, maybe we can address those first, and then Avig and Ritesh can go to the question form.
Another question?
Yeah, Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Thank you for your presentation. I really liked the honesty, intensity, and tenacity, these three points of focus. And I was just kind of thinking that I feel like in order to be able to increase one's honesty or intensity or tenacity in relation to Krishna consciousness, there needs to be a base level of faith. Because if the faith is weak, then I may not necessarily feel like increasing my intensity or tenacity for something that I don't believe in. Mm-hmm. So do you have any tips on how to increase that base level of faith that will allow us to, you know, increase the rest of these?
Yeah. Thank you. Really good question. Thank you, Prabhuji. I just share my screen with you. We can say basically there are different building blocks of faith. If we look at faith, then faith really we can say is in the beginning stages of life built upon two things: philosophy and people. In other words, Shastra can give one great faith, because when one reads Shastra, then first thing is one is associating with the most faithful personalities in the universe, the acharyas, the sages, and by associating with them, you get some of their faith. But also the words and the logic and the rationale and the insights of Shastra, when we compare it to what we see in the world around us and how Shastra gives us the bigger vision, then that philosophy gives us a lot of faith. So, that's why studying the books is really, really important, because that philosophy will help you to build your faith. But the other thing that helps you to build your faith are people, the ones who have internalized that Shastra, who are living that Shastra. And by associating with those devotees who you have great relationship and love for, some of their faith will rub off onto you. But now let me say that the faith of these two is almost still what we call borrowed faith. It still hasn't become our internalized faith. And what we do is that the faith that we've gained from philosophy and people, we then translate into practice of spiritual life. And when we practice spiritual life, practice the devotional process, then what happens is that we get an experience of Krishna. And that experience of Krishna is what then really takes our faith to the next level. Because we begin with Shraddha, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, but then we come to the point of Nishtha. Nishtha means a kind of faith which has solidified into conviction because one has realization. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma Kuta Sto Vijitendriya, that the self-realized soul by dint of knowledge and realization is fixed in consciousness. And therefore, these are kind of like the three P's of faith that initially is founded upon philosophy and people. And this is what we focus on. And then as we build our faith and we engage that faith in practicing spiritual life, then the faith goes to another level. And in this way, one gains much more conviction. And that's why, if you think about it, Prabhupada's two greatest gifts were number one, his books, and number two, the society and the temples and the ISKCON movement. Because through those two things, that's what's going to build your faith. And upon that faith, you then get entrance into meeting Krishna, finding Krishna, contacting Krishna face to face. So these are some thoughts. Hope that helps.
So we have a question on the anonymous Q&A form. So I feel at times it's hard to understand and even relate to our scriptures. I do spend time studying and reading them, but sometimes I feel like I can't relate to them. With that being said, how can I train my mind to understand them and utilize them in moving from being mediocre to more connected with the philosophy? How can I move across the spectrum?
Yeah, so sometimes you feel the scriptures to be difficult to understand, maybe not relatable. Therefore, today is the day of drawing, so let me just carry on drawing. Sometimes I have these days where I can only think in drawings, you know, so let me just share with you my screen. So how to make Shastra more relevant, yeah? Like, this is a big point, because sometimes Shastra or scripture seems too far away. So one thing is the method. There is actually a way and means to study Shastra. And let me tell you, it's not just by reading. Yeah, the method in which you study Shastra is you have to study it systematically. And you have to study it in Sangha with others. Now, when you study systematically and with Sangha, you'll find that your illumination of the Shastra is like magnified many, many times. When I was 15, I picked up the Bhagavad Gita and I was trying to read it for 1.5 years. And I came to one class at the manor, and in 1 hour, I felt like I learned more than I did in 1.5 years of reading by myself. When you read scriptures together, then you go away and read yourself, it makes a big difference. So first thing is, there is a method by which to study Shastra. Now, let me tell you, there's another thing. There's the mood. Shastra is not just an intellectual thing. And if you approach it in an intellectual way, you will also sometimes find it to be dry, or you will sometimes find it to be, according to your conception, illogical. You will find it to be mythological or beyond what you would say reality is, because you're not reading with the right mood. And therefore, one must read Shastra prayerfully. One must understand that the Shastra is Krishna. Like, for example, Sanatan Goswami says, Shri Krishna Parivartita, when he's glorifying the Bhagavatam, he's saying that the Bhagavatam, Shri Krishna Parivartita, is Krishna who has come back himself to this world. So it's kind of like an you may feel it to be an esoteric point, but the Bhagavatam is a person, is Krishna. And therefore, you can't enter into the mysteries of Bhagavatam if you don't have the mood of entering into it in a prayerful mood. It's not just an intellectual or scholastic exercise. And then, so these are the two main first things I would say, is the way you study Shastra and the mood with which you study Shastra. And then what I would say is just patience. Because scriptures are like a person, and a person and a relationship with them is revealed over time. If you don't spend time with the Shastra, then your relationship with Shastra will remain very, very superficial. Try to think about your interaction with Shastra or scriptures, not as a one-off experience, but as a relationship that you are cultivating over time. You see? Otherwise, someone just says, oh, I read the Bhagavatam and I didn't connect with it. But it's like saying that I just met someone for the first time and I spent 5 minutes with them. I didn't really get along with them, so I just ditched that. And no, it's in relationship. You have to invest in it. And over time, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. So try to see Shastra and your connection with it as an ongoing relationship. That's very, very important.
I think Jessica had a question.
Yes, very Hare Krishna Prabhu. Very nice seeing you again, and amazing, amazing chapter. We're always on book leadership calls together. I definitely love how you said fill in the gaps, and Sankirtan General, Vaisheshi Prabhu, every time he comes to Toronto, he has this technique of always filling in the gaps, even when he's leaving one house and going to another house to knock on the door. He's filling the whole environment with Krishna consciousness. So I really loved how you said that, and especially during this time, during this pandemic, we definitely have to be filling in the gaps. So one of my questions is for you, what type of techniques or ways do you personally fill in the gaps, and what has been working for you?
Thank you. I had this technique, and I've done it for many, many years, that whenever I go to bed at night, and I kind of... Well, I don't have a bed. We're in a sleeping bag on the floor in the Brahmacharya Ashram. But whenever I get into my sleeping bag, then I kind of lie down and I just rewind to the beginning of the day. And I do this every single night. And I rewind to the beginning of the day and I'm like, okay, I got up at 3:45. Then what did I do? And I go literally 15 minutes, half an hour by half an hour through my whole day. And I kind of just assess, how did I use my day? Was it effective? Were there any gaps? Where were the opportunities for greater absorption? And many days before I get through the whole day, I've already fell asleep by that time, which means generally it's a good day if that happened. But I just do that as a reflection. And it's interesting, one of the symptoms of bhava that Rupa Goswami outlines is avyartha kalatvam. He says, like, one in the state of bhava never wastes a moment. And I think there's just so many things you can do in Krishna consciousness to just make, like, every second count, yeah? It's like you can always have a book open in a room so that when you have a spare moment, you glance at it. You can have a kirtan going on. You can, you just kind of, you know, like what I do every single morning. I don't know if you can see it here. Like, yeah, for example, I don't know if you can see this, but maybe this is a better example. So what I do at the beginning of every week, you probably can't see that, but I kind of, I go like seven rows and then I go like down the middle. And then on one side is like the basic general schedule for that day. And on the other side is like a bunch of things that I need to get done in that day. So what I do is I follow my schedule and then I know I got to get these things done in the day. So whenever I have like spare moments, I know what I need to work on. And then simultaneous to that, like on the back, I have like other spiritual goals that I'm trying to pursue. So if somehow I'm going through my day and I've completed these things, then I know, well, hang on, you've got a whole bunch of other spiritual. So there's never any time to lose. You just use time. And yeah, it's amazing how much you can get done. This is my firm conviction when it comes to time management, that if you don't waste time, two incredible things happen, and I've experienced it again and again. If you can somehow come to the point in your life where you don't waste time, the first thing that happens is Krishna starts empowering you to do more in the same amount of time. That's the first thing that happens. And the second thing that happens is Krishna just somehow or other by his mystical potency starts opening up like all these windows of opportunity for time. Like someone just comes along and says like, oh yeah, you needed to, okay, I've already done that for you. Don't worry, you got like a couple of hours free. And you're like, wow, a couple of hours free. That's amazing. And, you know, Krishna just gifts it to you. So, but if we're wasting time, then Krishna's kind of looking at us saying, why should I give you any more time? Because you're not even utilizing the time that I've given you properly. So when people say they don't have time, I think if we just look closer and ask myself, it's probably because I'm wasting time. And if I cut out time wasting, then these two mystical things happen and it's really satisfying. And you can get so much done.
Yes, definitely amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely amazing points. And it definitely goes in effect with your mindset and how much you actually want to accomplish and how much you actually want to, this intense greed or desire to do service definitely comes up. So very thankful.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Yeah, maybe like, I raised this point. I just shared a verse with you, and perhaps all of you in your own time can look at this, because I talked about the symptoms of bhava, and one may think like bhava, come on, like, excuse me, like get real, like we're not there, you know. But here they are. Here are the symptoms of bhava. Yeah, you can take the reference Madhya 23:18-19. And if you look, Srila Prabhupada, when he talked about these signs of bhava, he talked about them not just as a perfection of what someone in bhava experiences, but he also taught these nine symptoms of bhava as something that a devotee can look at in their life and ask themselves, how much am I cultivating this? So in Krishna consciousness, what we're doing is we're mirroring our aspiration. So when you mirror the mentality and the activities of a bhava bhakta, a devotee in bhava, then you progress towards bhava. So here are these things: forgiveness, not wasting time, detachment, freedom from false prestige, cultivating hope, having great eagerness, a taste for chanting the holy name, attachment, addiction to glorifying the Lord's qualities, and affection for the places where the Lord resides, the Dham. As one cultivates these characteristics of a Bhava Bhakta, then we get there slowly, bit by bit. And so, yeah, really look at those, you know, put those up on your wall and ask yourself, how much am I investing in such things? And then one will come out of mediocrity and start to experience a much higher quality of spiritual life. Yeah. You guys can tell me when to cut, because I guess we've been going nearly 1.5 hours. So just tell me when.
Yeah, I know we've been going over time. So you can let us know if you need to leave. That's
for
fine.
Me, it's fine. All of you, I don't know. It's like Sunday. Maybe yeah. I have things to do. So you just tell me. I'm okay.
Yeah, I think what we'll do, we have a lot of questions coming in, you know, in the forum, and as well, I think there's a few more who want to ask in person. So I think we can do 2 more questions and wrap it up at 12:30. Well, where I am, 12:30. So we can do 1 more question from the forum, and then 1 more from someone in the call. Avig, you want to ask the one question from the forum, if there's any good ones you see?
Yeah. So I've noticed that more dirt comes out for me the longer I've been practicing spiritual life seriously. I know it's said that the higher awareness from spiritual life brings out the negative stuff initially, but how do we know if it's because we're actually not making progress or doing other things wrong? What should we do?
Yeah, good question. So as we go on in spiritual life, it feels like we're gaining more and more realization of how fallen we are. And how do we know that's a sign of whether we're actually advancing because we're getting more realization about our fallen state, or whether we're actually just getting worse because more things are coming out, you know, that weren't there before? It's kind of like this. When you see a mountain from far away, then the mountain looks big. But as you start getting closer to the mountain, the size of the mountain feels like it's getting bigger and bigger. And as you get closer and closer to the mountain feels like it's getting bigger and bigger. And simultaneously, you feel like you're getting smaller and smaller. So the kind of paradox is you're getting closer to the mountain, but you're actually feeling yourself to be smaller and smaller. And so this is the experience of someone who's actually advancing in spiritual life in a healthy way. As they move closer to Krishna, their realization of Krishna's greatness is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Their appreciation for Krishna is growing and growing and growing. And in relation to their growing appreciation for Krishna, they're feeling themselves to be more and more fallen, more and more dirty, more and more imperfect. Therefore, someone like Kaviraj Goswami says, I'm lower than the worm in the stool. I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madai. Someone who sees me loses all their pious goods. You think like, you're Krishna, that's Kaviraj Goswami. How can you say this? Because his appreciation for Krishna, for Mahaprabhu is so great, in relation, he's feeling himself to be very, very fallen. So if someone says, I'm going on in spiritual life and I feel like I'm becoming worse and worse, or I feel like I'm getting a realization of how much more fallen I am, how do I know whether that's a healthy sign or an unhealthy sign? Just ask yourself, is that feeling of being more and more fallen accompanied by a greater and greater appreciation of Krishna? Is it accompanied by a greater and greater hope and gratitude for being in the Krishna consciousness movement and process, which is ultimately the way to overcome these things? Because when both things come together, then we can understand that that feeling of being, feeling yourself to be more and more fallen is actually a healthy feeling, because it's not because you're getting worse, but it's because your appreciation for Krishna is growing, and in relation to that, you're feeling yourself to be more and more inadequate. So in Krishna, that's why I said, in Krishna consciousness, our feeling of inadequacy in ourself should always be juxtaposed with a greater and greater feeling of confidence and appreciation and hope based on the greatness of Krishna. Both things must go side by side. Because if you don't, then you will just become depressed, hopeless, and helpless, and then leave the process altogether. So those are some thoughts. I don't know if it answered exactly the question, but I hope those give you something to think about.
So we'll take, if someone has a question they want to ask and unmute here, we'll take one more question and then we'll wrap it up. So feel free to raise your hand or just go ahead and unmute if anyone has a question, or put it in the chat.
Actually, you wanted to ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Abhay. Yeah.
So earlier you were talking about the method to reading Shastra. So there's this one point you said, read systematically. So what exactly does that mean? Like, is there some order that we're supposed to go through? Or?
The first thing, thanks for your question, Prue. The first thing is that everyone's an individual, so everyone will read in different ways. So just find, the first and foremost disclaimer that I have to give is that whatever I say, it may or may not work for you, but everyone has to find their method. For me, what works when studying Shastra is study it in layers. So the first layer when you're studying Shastra is just get through it and understand it as an overview. The second layer is the time when you begin to see links and you try to understand the landscape of how it all fits together. And then the third layer on top of that is when you go in deeply into different sections and then try to pick out your own wisdom, like your own gems of wisdom. So that's how I generally study Shastra. If you ask my opinion, I think that you only read a book when you're reading it, at least a spiritual book, you only really read it when you're reading it for the third or fourth time. Sorry if that sounds intimidating, because you probably look at all the books on your shelf and you think you're blinking out. Even one time through all of these will be difficult. But my strong conviction is that when you're reading something for the third or fourth time, then you can really begin to engage with it. Because Shastra happens in layers. Shastra is a relationship. Shall I tell you one amazing quote from the Niti Shastra? It says, when you're chanting, you should have the mindset that I'm going to die tomorrow. But when you're studying Shastra, you should have the mindset that I'm going to live forever. Interesting point. When you're chanting, it's in a mood of desperation. This is it. Hand in the bead bag. This is it. Life or death. Like you really just in the moment. But when you're studying Shastra, it's a different mindset. You have to be patient. You have to go slow. You have to go deep. And you have to see it more than just today's reading. It has to be a lifetime of development or relationship with the Shastra. So if you want to make Bhagavatam your constant companion, then you got to say, I dedicate my life to Bhagavatam. Isn't it? Till death do us part. Of course, even death doesn't do you part with the Bhagavatam, but it's kind of like that. You marry the Bhagavatam and you say, that's it. We're together. Whatever may happen, and I dedicate myself to, and in this way, it's a lifelong journey with the Bhagavatam together, and study it in layers. Like you read the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, when you read it for the first time, you just think, oh my God, like this is, but I tell you, it's incredible. I read the fifth canto now like a few times. And after the third or fourth time, you start reading the fifth canto and you see it totally different. You actually feel like super nourished by reading I would feel like that about the fifth canto, which is, you know, about planetary systems, cosmology, distances between planets and all that. But you get to a point where you've invested in it, you feel a familiarity with it, some relationship with it. And when you read it, you can go to a deeper level. So, yeah, I guess that's what I'm kind of want to share with you, that it's a lifetime of study. I tell you one final story. Prabhupada was in 26 Second Avenue. So he was a new devotee. He came and he said, Swamiji, I want to help you out. So Prabhupada said, yeah, you can type up some manuscripts for me. So Prabhupada gave up a whole bunch of manuscripts. So this, he went away and he kind of typed it up or whatever. And then he came back after a few days. He said, Swamiji, I'm done. Like, okay, any more service to do, Swamiji? I'm done with your manuscript, your bunch of manuscripts. That's a dangerous thing to say in a Hare Krishna temple. Any more service for me? So again, but Prabhupada, you know what he did? He opened up a wardrobe behind him and the whole wardrobe was full with manuscripts. And this person was just like, oh my God, like he nearly fainted, you know? Prabhupada said, here, you want more service? Type all of this up. And then the devotee looked at Prabhupada and he said, Swamiji, this is like a lifetime of study. And Prabhupada looked back at him and said, this is many lifetimes of study. Many lifetimes of study. So the Bhagavatam is many lifetimes of study. It's like, it's amazing. And the sages say, Vayam tu na vitripyama uttama shloka vikrame ya chinvatam rasagyanam svadu svadu pade pade. They say, we never tire. We never tire to hear the narrations of the Bhagavatam because svadu svadu pade pade, at every step there is greater and greater taste because there's so much rasa, there's so much relish. So we want to get to that stage, but it must be done in layers. So yeah, take the help of study guides, take the help of devotees, and most importantly, go in front of the Bhagavatam and say, till death do us part. It's a lifetime together with the Bhagavatam, and walk on that journey and amazing things will be revealed to you through Bhagavatam. Thank you so much for your attention, for your patience, for being here today. And hope all the devotees are well and healthy. And we hope we'll all be together again after this chaotic time in the world concludes. And wishing you all the best. Thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was incredible. I don't have anything else to say. I think, you know, the way we wrapped it up was perfect. And I think, you know, we all appreciate your insights and encouragement and positivity and your illustrations. That was really helpful too. One thing that I will mention, I kind of alluded to this earlier in the call, but Prabhuji actually has written like multiple books, multiple guides on the Shastra that could be helpful. I know that I've used a couple of them and they've been very helpful for me. There's guides on the Gita, the Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I think they're all actually available online. Maybe we can share the link after this call. And if you feel like you'd benefit from those books, they're available. So again, thank you so much, Prabhuji.
I just put the link on the, you can just go to tattva.co.uk and they're all available for free PDF download. If you want a physical copy, if you go to, I think it's krishnashopping.com, you can get physical copies of all the books. They can ship it out to you. So yeah, we got all the books just reprinted. So, but otherwise the PDF is available for free. So that's also fine.
Yeah. All right. So thank you so much, Prabhuji. And if anyone else wants to listen to more classes or lectures, they're available on SoundCloud. I know a couple of us have been using those too. So if you're interested, you can always check out Prabhuji's channel there as well. So with that, we'll wrap it up and hope to see you.